We have a phone record, Rachel said. Last night at midnight, someone placed a call from this house to a certain cell phone. We assume it was you.
No, that's not possible.
Katerina's eyes started shifting as if seeking out an escape route. Vern still held her hand. He tried to meet her gaze, but she kept avoiding it.
Oh, wait, she said. Maybe I know.
We waited.
Last night, when I was sleeping, the phone rang.
She tried to smile again, but it was having trouble staying anchored.
I don't know what time it was. Very late. I thought maybe it was you, Vern.
She looked at him, and now the smile held. He smiled back.
But when I answered it, there was no one there. So I remembered something I saw on the television. *69. You hit those numbers and it dials the number. So I did that. A man answered. It wasn't Vern, so I hung up.
She looked at us expectantly. Rachel and I exchanged a glance. Vern was still smiling, but I saw his shoulders drop. He let go of her hand and half collapsed onto the couch. Katerina started toward the kitchen.
You need another beer, Vern?
No, darling, I don't. I want you to sit here next to me. She was hesitant, but she listened. She sat with her spine still ramrod. Vern, too, sat up tall and again took her hand.
I want you to listen to me, okay?
She nodded. The children were wailing with delight outside. Corny to say, but there are few sounds like the unimpeded laughter of children. Katerina looked at Vern with an intensity that almost made me turn away.
You know how much we love our boys, right?
She nodded.
Imagine if someone took them away from us. Imagine if that happened more than a year ago. Think about it. Imagine if someone stole, say, Perry, and for more than a year we didn't know where he was.
He pointed to me. That man over there. He doesn't know what happened to his little girl. Her eyes were brimming with tears. We have to help him, Kat. Whatever you know, whatever you've done, I don't care. If there are secrets, you tell them now. We wipe the slate clean. I can forgive just about anything. But I don't think I can forgive if you don't help that man and his little girl.
She lowered her head and said nothing.
Rachel ratcheted up a notch.
If you're trying to protect the man you called, don't bother.
He's dead. Someone shot him a few hours after you called. Katerina's head stayed down. I rose and started pacing. From outside, there was another squeal of laughter. I walked over to the window and looked out. Vern Jr., the boy looked to be about 6, shouted, "Ready or not, here I come!" It wouldn't be too hard to find him. I couldn't see Perry, but the hiding child's laughter was clearly coming from behind the Camaro. Vern Jr. pretended to look elsewhere, but not for very long. He sneaked up on the Camaro and yelled, "Boo!" Perry popped out, still laughing, and ran. When I saw the boy's face, I felt my world, already teetering, take another hit. See, I recognized Perry. It was the little boy I'd seen in the car last night.
Chapter 36. Tickner parked in front of the Seidman house,
They hadn't put up the yellow crime scene tape yet, but he counted 6 squad cars and 2 news vans. He wondered if it'd be a good idea to approach, what with the cameras rolling. Pistillo, his boss's boss, had made it pretty clear where he stood. In the end, Tickner figured that it was safe enough to stay. If he was caught on camera, he could always opt for the truth. He had come to let the locals know that he was off the case. Tickner found Regan in the backyard with the body. "Who is he?" "No ID," Regan said. "We'll send in the prints, see what we come up with." They both looked down. "He matches that sketch Seidman gave us last year," Tickner said.
"Yep."
"So what does that mean?" Regan shrugged. "What have you learned so far?" "The neighbors heard shots first. That was followed by screeching tires. They saw a BMW Mini driving across the grass. More shots. They spotted Seidman. One neighbor said he might have seen a woman with him." "Probably Rachel Mills," Tickner said. He looked up in the morning sky. "So what does it mean?" "Maybe the victim worked for Rachel. She silenced him."
"In front of Seidman?"
Regan shrugged. "The BMW Mini struck a chord, though. I remembered that Seidman's partner had one. Zia LaRue?" "That would be who helped him get out of the hospital. We have an APB on the car. I'm sure they switched vehicles." "Yeah, probably." Then Regan stopped.
"Uh-oh."
"What?"
He pointed at Tickner's face. "You're not wearing your sunglasses."
Tickner smiled. "Bad omen. The way this case is going, maybe it's a good one. I came to tell you I'm off the case. Not just me, the Bureau. If you can prove the girl is still alive, which we both know she ain't, or that she was transported across state lines, I can probably get back in. But this case is no longer a priority."
"Back to terrorism, Lloyd?"
Tickner nodded. He looked back up in the sky. It felt weird without the sunglasses. "What did your boss want, anyway?"
"To tell me what I just told you."
"Uh-huh. Anything else?" Tickner shrugged.
"The shooting of federal agent Jerry Camp was accidental. Your big boss called you into his office before 6 in the morning to tell you that?"
"Yep."
"Yowza."
"Not only that, he investigated the case personally. He and the victim were friends."
Regan shook his head. "Does this mean Rachel Mills has powerful friends?"
"Not at all. If you can nail her for the Seidman murder or kidnapping, go to it. Just don't involve the death of Jerry Camp."
"There you go." Someone called out. They looked over. A gun had been found in the neighbor's yard. A quick sniff told them that it had been fired recently.
"Convenient," Regan added.
"Yep."
"Any thoughts?"
"Nope."
Tickner turned to him.
"It's your case, Bob."
"Always was."
"Good luck."
"Thanks."
Tickner walked away.
"Hey, Lloyd," Regan called out.
Tickner stopped. The gun had been bagged. Regan stared at it, then at the body by his feet.
"We still don't know what's going on here, do we?"
Tickner continued toward his car.
"Not a clue," he said.
Katerina had her hands in her lap.
"Is he really dead?"
"Yes." Rachel said. Vern stood, fuming, his arms folded over his chest. He had been that way since I told him that Perry had been the child I saw in the Honda Accord. He's Pavel. He was my brother. We waited for her to say more. He was not a good man. I always knew that. He could be cruel. Kosovo makes you that way. But kidnapping a small child? She shook her head. What happened? Rachel asked. But her eyes were on her husband.
Vern?
He would not look at her. I lied to you, Vern. I lied to you about so much. He tucked his hair behind his ears and blinked. I saw him wet his lip with his tongue. But he would still not look at her. I didn't come from a farm, she said. My father died when I was 3. My mother took any job she could, but we couldn't get by. We were too poor. We'd steal rinds out of the garbage. Pavel, he stayed on the streets, begging and stealing. I started working in sex clubs when I was 14. You can't imagine what it was like. But there is no way out of that life in Kosovo. I wanted to kill myself. I can't tell you how many times. She raised her head toward her husband, but Vern still wouldn't meet her gaze. Look at me, she said to him. When he didn't, she leaned forward.
Vern?
This ain't about us, he said. Just tell them what they need to know. Katerina put her hands in her lap. After a while, when you live like that, you don't think about escape. You don't think about pretty things or happiness or any of that. You become like an animal. You just hunt and survive. And I don't even know why you do that. But one day, Pavel came to me. He told me he knew a way out. Katerina stopped. Rachel moved closer to her. I let her handle this. She had experience with interrogation, and at the risk of sounding sexist, I thought that Katerina would have an easier time being drawn out by a fellow female. What was the way out? Rachel asked. My brother said he could get us some money, and to America, if I could get pregnant. I thought. Check that. I hoped I'd heard wrong. Vern whipped his head toward her. This time Katerina was ready. She looked at him steadily. I don't understand, Vern said. I'm worth something as a prostitute. But a baby is worth more. If I get pregnant, someone can get us to America. They will pay us money. The room went silent. I could still hear the children outside, but the sound suddenly seemed far away, a distant echo. I was the one who spoke next, reaching through the numb. They pay you? I said, hearing the horror and disbelief in my own voice. For the baby? Yes. Vern said, sweet Jesus. You can't understand. Oh, I understand, Vern said. Did you go through with it? Yes. Vern turned away as if he'd been slapped. His hand reached up and took hold of the curtain. He stared out at his own children.
In my country, if you have a baby, they put it in a horrible orphanage. American parents, they want so much to adopt. But it's hard. It takes a long time. More than a year, sometimes. Meanwhile, the baby lives in squalor. The parents, they must pay government officials. The system is so corrupt.
I see, Vern said.
You were doing it for the good of mankind.
No.
I did it for me. For me only, okay?
Vern winced. Rachel put her hand on Katerina's knee.
So, you flew over here?
Yes. Pavel and I.
Then what?
We stayed at a motel. I would visit a woman with white hair. She would check on me, make sure I was eating okay. She gave me money to buy food and supplies.
Rachel nodded, encouraging.
Where did you have the baby?
I don't know. A van with no windows came. The woman with white hair, she was there. She delivered the baby. I remember hearing it cry. And they took it away. I don't even know if it was a boy or a girl. They drove us back to the motel. The woman with the white hair, she gave us our money.
Katerina shrugged. It felt as if my circulation had stopped. I tried to think this through, get past the horror. I looked at Rachel and started to ask how, but she shook her head. Now was not the time to make deductions. Now was the time to gather information.
I loved it here, Katerina said after some time had passed. You think you have a wonderful country, but you really have no idea. I wanted so much to stay. But the money started running low. I looked for ways. I met a woman who told me about the website. You put your name and men write you. They wouldn't want a whore, she told me. So I made up a biography with a farm. When men asked, I gave them an email address. I met Vern 3 months later.
Vern's face fell even farther.
You mean, the whole time we were writing? I was in America, yes.
He shook his head.
Was anything you told me the truth? Everything that mattered?
Vern made a scoffing sound.
What about Pavel?
Rachel asked, trying to get us back on topic.
Where did he go?
I don't know. He went back home sometimes, I know. He would recruit other girls to bring over. For the finder's fee. Time to time, he would contact me. If he needed a few dollars, I'd give it to him. It was really no big deal. Until yesterday.
Katerina looked up at Vern.
The children, they will be hungry.
They can wait.
What happened yesterday?
Rachel asked.
Pavel called late in the afternoon. He says he needs to see me right away. I don't like that. I ask him what he wants. He says he'll tell me when he gets here, not to worry. I don't know what to say.
How about no? Vern snapped.
I couldn't say no. Why not?
She didn't answer.
Oh, I see. You were afraid he'd tell me the truth.
Isn't that it? I don't know. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Yes, I was terrified he'd tell you the truth.
Again, she looked up at her husband.
And I prayed he would.
Rachel tried to get us back on course.
What happened when your brother got here?
She started welling up.
Katerina. He said he needed to take Perry with him.
Vern's eyes widened. Katerina's chest started hitching as if it was hard to get air.
I said to him no. I said I wouldn't let him touch my children.
He threatened me. He said he'd tell Vern everything.
I said I didn't care. I wasn't going to let him take Perry. Then he punched me in the stomach. I fell down. He promised me he'd bring Perry back in a few hours. He promised me no one would get hurt unless I said something. If I called Vern or the police, he'd kill Perry.
Vern's hands were balled into tight fists. His face was scarlet.
I tried to stop him. I tried to stand up, but Pavel pushed me back down. And then,
her voice caught.
Then, he drove away. With Perry. The next 6 hours were the longest of my life.
She sneaked a guilty glance in my direction. I knew what she was thinking. She had experienced this terror for 6 hours. I'd been living with it for a year and a half.
I didn't know what to do. My brother is a bad man. I know that. But I couldn't believe he'd ever hurt my children. He was their uncle.
I thought about Stacy then, my sister, my words of sibling defense echoing in hers.
For hours I stayed by the window. I couldn't stand it. Finally, at midnight, I called his cell phone. He told me he was on his way back. Perry was fine, he said. Nothing had happened. He tried to sound light, but there was something in his voice. I asked him where he was. He told me he was on Route 80 near Patterson. I couldn't just sit in the house and wait. I told him I'd meet him halfway. I packed Vern Jr. and we went. When we got to the gas station by the Sparta exit,
she looked at Vern.
He was fine. Perry. I felt such relief you can't imagine.
Vern was tugging on his bottom lip with his thumb and index finger. He looked away again.
Before I left, Pavel grabbed my arm hard. He pulled me close to him. I could see how scared he was. He said, no matter what, never tell anybody about what happened. That if they found out about me, if they knew he had a sister, they would kill us all.
Who is they? Rachel asked.
I don't know. Whoever he was working for. The people who bought the babies, I think. He said they were crazy.
What did you do then?
Katerina opened her mouth, closed it, tried again.
I went to the supermarket, she said, with a sound that might have even been a laugh. I bought the kids' juice boxes. I let them drink while we shopped. I just wanted to do something normal. To put it all behind me.
Katerina looked up at Vern then. I followed her gaze.
I again studied this man with the long hair and the bad teeth. After a moment, he turned to her.
"It's all right," Vern said in the gentlest voice I'd ever heard.
"You were scared.
You've been scared your whole life."
Katerina started sobbing.
"I don't want you to be scared anymore, okay?"
He moved toward her. He took her in his arms. She settled enough to say,
"He said they'd come after us. The whole family."
"Then I'll protect us," Vern said simply.
He looked at me over her shoulder.
"They took my kid. They threatened my family.
You hear what I'm saying?"
I nodded.
"I'm in this now. I'm with you till it's over."
Rachel sat back. I saw her grimace. Her eyes closed. I didn't know how much longer she could go. I moved toward her. She held up her palm.
"Katerina, we need you to help us here. Where was your brother staying?"
"I don't know."
"Think. Do you have any of his possessions? Something that can lead us to who he worked for?"
She let go of her husband. Vern stroked her hair with a blend of tenderness and strength I envied. I turned to Rachel. I wondered if I had the courage to do the same.
"Pavel just arrived from Kosovo," Katerina said. "And he would not come here empty-handed."
Rachel nodded.
"You think he brought a pregnant woman with him?"
"He always did before."
"Do you know where she's staying?"
"The women always stay at the same place. The same place I stayed. It's in Union City."
Katerina looked up.
"You'll want this woman to help you, right?"
"Yes."
"Then I'll have to go with you. She most likely won't speak English."
I looked at Vern. He nodded. "I'll watch the kids." No one moved for several moments. We needed to gather our strength, adjust as if we'd entered a no-gravity zone. I used the time to step outside and call Zia. She answered on the first ring and started right in.
"The cops might be listening in, so let's not stay on the line too long," Zia said.
"Okay."
"Our friend Detective Regan came to my house. He told me that he thought you used my car to leave the hospital. I called Lenny. Lenny told me to neither confirm nor deny any allegations. You can probably guess the rest."
"Thanks."
"You being careful?"
"Always."
"Sure. By the way, the cops aren't stupid. They figure that if you used one friend's car, maybe they would look for another."
I got her meaning. Don't use Lenny's car.
"Better hang up now," she said. "Love you."
The phone went dead. I moved back inside. Vern had unlocked his gun cabinet using a key. He was checking weapons. On the other side of the room, he had a safe with ammunition. It opened by combination. I looked over his shoulder. Vern wiggled his eyebrows at me. He had enough firepower to overthrow a European country. I told him about my conversation with Zia. Vern did not hesitate. He slapped my back and said, "I have just the vehicle for you." 10 minutes later, Katerina, Rachel, and I drove off in a white Camaro.
Chapter 37.
We found the pregnant girl right away. Before we vroomed off in Vern's ride, Rachel jumped in the shower to rinse off the blood and grime. I quickly changed her bandage. Katerina loaned her a summer dress with a flower print, the kind that fits loose but clings just right. Rachel's hair was wet and kinky, still dripping when we reached the car. Forget the bruises and swelling. I am not sure that I ever saw a more beautiful woman in my life. We started driving. Katerina insisted on taking the fold-down seat in the back. That left Rachel and me in the front. For a few minutes, nobody spoke. We were, I think, decompressing. What Vern said, Rachel began, about getting the secrets out of the way and wiping the slate clean. I kept driving. I didn't kill my husband, Mark. She didn't seem to care that Katerina was in the car. Neither did I. The official word is that it was an accident, I said. The official word is a lie. She let out a long breath. She needed time to gather herself. I gave it to her. It was Jerry's second marriage. He had two kids from his first. His son Derek has cerebral palsy. The expenses are ridiculous. Jerry was never good with finances or anything like that, but he did his best there. He even set up a large life insurance policy in case something happened to him. In my peripheral vision, I could see her hands. They didn't move or tighten into fists. They just sat primly in her lap. Our marriage fell apart. There were a lot of reasons. I mentioned some before. I really didn't love him. I think he sensed that. But most of all, Jerry was a manic depressive. When he stopped taking his medication, it got worse. So I finally filed for divorce. I peeked over at her. She was biting her lip and blinking. On the day they served him papers, Jerry shot himself in the head. I was the one who found him slumped over our kitchen table. There was an envelope with my name on it. I recognized Jerry's handwriting right away. I opened it up. There was just a single sheet of paper with one word written on it. Bitch. Katerina put a comforting hand on Rachel's shoulder. I concentrated hard on the road. I think Jerry did it like that on purpose, she said, because he knew what I'd have to do. What was that? I asked. A suicide would mean that the life insurance wouldn't pay. Derek would be financially devastated. I couldn't let that happen. I called one of my old bosses, a friend of Jerry's named Joseph Pistillo. He's a big deal in the FBI. He brought down a few of his men, and we made it look like an accident. The official line was I mistook him for a burglar. The local cops and the insurance company were both pressured into signing off on it. She shrugged. So why did you leave the bureau? I asked. Because the rank and file never bought it. They all thought that I must be sleeping with someone powerful. Pistillo couldn't protect me. It would look bad. I couldn't defend myself for that matter. I tried to tough it out, but the FBI is not a place for the unwanted. Her head dropped back against the pad. She looked out the passenger window. I didn't know what to make of the story. I didn't know what to make of any of this yet. I wished that I could say something comforting. I couldn't. I just kept driving until we mercifully arrived at the motel in Union City. Katerina approached the check-in desk, pretending to speak only Serbian, gesturing like mad, until the clerk, figuring that it was the only way to settle her down, told her the room number of the only other person on the premises who seemed to speak that language. We were in business. The pregnant girl's room was more a low-end efficiency unit than something you'd find in a normal highway motel. I refer to her as a pregnant girl because Tatiana, that was what she said her name was, claimed to be 16. I suspected that she was younger. Tatiana had the sunken eyes of a child who'd just stepped out of a war newsreel, which in this situation may have literally been the case. I stayed back, almost out of the room. So did Rachel. Tatiana did not speak English. We let Katerina handle it. The two of them talked for about 10 minutes. After that, there was a brief silence. Tatiana sighed, opened the drawer under the phone, and gave Katerina a piece of paper. Katerina kissed her cheek and then came over to us. "She's scared," Katerina said. "She only knew Pavel. He left her yesterday and said not to leave the room under any circumstances." I glanced over at Tatiana. I tried to give her a reassuring smile. It fell, I'm certain, way short. "What did she say?" Rachel asked. "She doesn't know anything, of course. Like me. She only knows that her baby will find a good home." "What was that piece of paper she gave you?" Katerina lifted the slip of paper into view. "It's a phone number. If there is an emergency, she's supposed to call and dial in 4 9s. "A beeper," I said. "Yes, I believe so." I looked at Rachel. "Can we trace it?" "I doubt it will lead anywhere. It's easy to get beepers using a phony name." "So let's call it," I said. I turned to Katerina. "Has Tatiana met anyone else besides your brother?"
"No."
"Then you make the call," I said to her. "You say you're Tatiana. You tell whoever answers that you're bleeding or in pain or something." "Whoa," Rachel said. "Slow down a second." "We need to get someone here," I said.
"And then what?"
"What do you mean, then what? You interrogate them. Isn't that what you do, Rachel?"
"I'm not a Fed anymore.
And even if I was, we can't just bulldoze them over like that. Pretend you're one of them for a second. You show up and I confront you. What would you do if you were involved in something like this?"
"Cut a deal."
"Maybe. Or maybe you'd just clam up and ask for a lawyer. Then where would we be?"
I thought about that.
"If the person asks for a lawyer," I said, "you leave them alone with me." Rachel stared at me. "Are you serious?"
"We're talking about my daughter's life."
"We're talking about a lot of children now, Mark. These people buy babies. We need to put them out of business."
"So what are you suggesting?"
"We page them, like you said. But Tatiana will have to do the talking. She'll have to say whatever to get them here. They'll examine her. We check their license plate. We follow them when they leave. We find out who they are."
"I don't understand," I said. "Why can't Katerina make the call?"
"Because whoever comes will want to examine the person they talk to on the phone. Katerina and Tatiana don't sound alike. They'll know what we're up to."
"But why do we need to go through all that? We'll have them here. Why risk following them home?"
Rachel closed her eyes, then opened them again.
"Mark, think. If they find out we're on to them, how will they react?"
I stopped. "And I want to be clear about something else. This isn't about just Tara anymore. We need to bring these guys down."
"And if we just jump them here," I said, seeing her true point now, "they'll be forewarned."
"That's right."
I wasn't sure how much I cared about that. Tara was my priority. If the FBI or cops want to build a legal case against these people, I was all for it. But that sat way off my personal radar. Katerina talked to Tatiana about her plan. I could see it wasn't taking. The young girl was petrified. She kept shaking her head no. Time passed. Time we really didn't have. I snapped and decided to do something fairly stupid. I picked up the phone, dialed the beeper number, and pressed the 9 button 4 times. Tatiana went still. "You'll do it," I said. Katerina translated. No one spoke for the next 2 minutes. We all just stared at Tatiana. When the phone rang, I did not like what I saw in the young girl's eyes. Katerina said something, her tone urgent. Tatiana shook her head and crossed her arms. The phone rang a third time, then a fourth. I took out my gun. Rachel said, "Mark." I kept the gun at my side. "Does she know we're talking about my daughter's life?" Katerina burst off something in Serbian. I looked Tatiana hard in the eyes. There was no reaction. I raised the gun and fired. The lamp exploded, the sound reverberating too loudly in the room. Everyone jumped. Another stupid move. I knew that. I just wasn't sure I cared. "Mark!" Rachel put her hand on my arm. I shook it off. I looked at Katerina. "Tell her if the caller hangs up." I never finished the thought. Katerina started talking quickly. I gripped the gun, but it was back at my side now. Tatiana still had her eyes on me. Sweat popped up on my forehead. I felt my body shake. As Tatiana watched me, something in her face began to soften. "Please," I said. On the 6th ring, Tatiana snatched up the receiver and started talking. I glanced over at Katerina. She listened to the conversation and then she nodded at me. I moved back to the other side of the room. I still had the gun in my hand. Rachel stared at me. But I stared back. Rachel blinked first. We parked the Camaro in a restaurant lot next door and waited. There was not a lot of chit-chat. The 3 of us looked everywhere but at each other as if we were all strangers on an elevator. I wasn't sure what to say. I wasn't sure what I felt. I had fired a gun and come pretty close to threatening a teenage girl. Worse, I don't think I cared very much. The repercussions, if there were any, seemed far away. Storm clouds that might gather and then again might disperse. I flipped on the radio and dialed into the local news station. I half expected someone to say, "We interrupt this program with this special bulletin," and then announce our names and give out descriptions and maybe warn that we were armed and dangerous. But there were no stories on a shooting in Caselton or a police search for us. Rachel and I were still in the front while Katerina lay across the fold-down seat in the back. Rachel had her Palm Pilot out. The stylus was in her hand, poised to tap. I debated calling Lenny, but I remembered Zia's warning. They'd be listening in. I had nothing much to report anyway. Just that I had threatened a pregnant 16-year-old girl with an illegal handgun taken off the corpse of a man who'd been murdered in my backyard. Lenny the lawyer would certainly not relish the details. "Do you think she'll cooperate?" I said. Rachel shrugged. Tatiana had promised that she was now with us. I didn't know if we could believe her or not. To be on the safe side, I unplugged her phone and took the cord with me. I searched the room for papers and writing material so she couldn't sneak her visitor a note. I found nothing. Rachel also put her cell phone on the window ledge to be used as a listening device. Katerina had the phone to her ear now. Again, she would translate. Half an hour later, a gold-toned Lexus SC-430 roared into the lot. I whistled low. A colleague at the hospital had just bought the same car. It put him back 60 grand. The woman who emerged sported a short, spiky shock of white hair. She wore a too-tight, hair-matching white shirt and, keeping with the theme, white pants, so tight they seemed to be hovering below skin level. Her arms were toned and tan. The woman had that look. You know the one. She brought on memories of the hot mother strutting around the tennis club. Rachel and I both turned to Katerina. Katerina nodded solemnly.
That's her. It's the woman who delivered my baby.
I saw Rachel begin working her Palm Pilot. What are you doing? I asked.
Putting in the license plate and make. We should know who the car is registered to in a matter of minutes.
How do you do that?
It's not hard, Rachel said.
Every law enforcement officer makes connections. And if you don't, you pay off someone at the DMV. $500, usually. Are you online or something?
She nodded. Wireless modem. A friend of mine named Harold Fisher. He's a tech geek who works freelance. He didn't like how the feds pushed me out.
So he helps you now?
Yes.
The white-haired woman leaned back in and pulled out what might have been a medical bag. She threw on a pair of designer sunglasses and hurried toward Tatiana's room. The woman knocked, the door opened, Tatiana let her in. I turned around in my seat and watched Katerina. She had the phone on mute.
Tatiana is telling her that she feels better now. The woman is annoyed. She called for nothing.
She paused. Have you heard a name yet? Katerina shook her head.
The woman is going to examine her.
Rachel stared at her tiny Palm Pilot screen as if it were a magic eight ball.
Bang!
What?
Denise Vanetch, 47 Riverview Avenue, Ridgewood, New Jersey, 46 years of age, no outstanding parking violations.
You got it that fast?
She shrugged.
All Harold has to do is type the license plate. He's going to see what he can dig up on her. Her stylus started up again.
Meanwhile, I'm going to plug the name into Google.
The search engine.
Yep. You'd be surprised what you can find.
I knew about that, actually. I once put my own name in. I don't remember why. Zia and I were drunk and did it for fun. She calls it ego surfing.
Not much speaking now.
Katerina's face was a mask of concentration.
Maybe she's examining her.
I looked over at Rachel.
2 hits on Google, she said. The first is a website for the Bergen County Planning Board.
She requested a variance to subdivide her lot. It was rejected.
The second, however, is more interesting. It's an alumni site. It lists past graduates that they're trying to locate.
What school? I asked.
University of Philadelphia Family Nurse and Midwifery.
That fit.
Katerina said, they're done.
Fast, I said.
Very.
Katerina listened some more.
The woman is telling Tatiana to take care of herself, that she should eat better for the baby, that she should call if she feels any further discomfort.
I turned to Rachel. Sounds more pleasant than when she arrived. Rachel nodded. The woman we assumed was Denise Vanetch came out. She walked with her head high, her rear end twitching in that cocky way. The stretched white shirt was ribbed, and I couldn't help but notice, rather see-through. She got in her car and took off. I started up the Camaro, the engine roaring like a lifetime smoker with a hacking cough. I followed at a safe distance. I wasn't too worried about losing her. We knew where she lived now. I still don't understand, I said to Rachel. How do they get away with buying babies? They find desperate women. They lure them here with promises of money and a stable, comfortable home for their child. But in order to adopt, I said, there's a whole procedure you have to go through. It's a pain in the ass. I know some children overseas, physically deformed children, people tried to bring over. You can't believe the paperwork. It's impossible. I don't have the answer to that, Mark. Denise Vanetch veered onto the New Jersey Turnpike North. That would be the way back to Ridgewood. I let the Camaro drop back another 20-30 feet. The right blinker came on, and the Lexus turned off at the Vince Lombardi rest stop. Denise Vanetch parked and headed inside. I pulled the car to the side of the ramp and looked at Rachel. She was biting her lip. Could be she's using the bathroom, I said. She washed up after examining Tatiana. Why didn't she go then? Maybe she's hungry. Does she look like she eats much Burger King to you, Mark? So what do we do? There was little hesitation. Rachel gripped the door handle. Drop me off by the door. Denise Vanetch was pretty sure that Tatiana was faking. The girl had claimed to be hemorrhaging. Denise checked the sheets. They hadn't been changed, yet there was no blood on them. The tiles on the floor were clean. The toilet seat was clean. There was no blood anywhere. That alone, of course, wouldn't mean all that much. There was a chance the girl had cleaned up. But there were other things. The gynecological examination showed no signs of distress. Nothing. Not the slightest red tint. Her vaginal hairs, too, had no traces of blood. Denise checked the shower when she finished up. Dry as bone. The girl had called less than an hour before. She claimed to be bleeding heavily. It didn't add up. Lastly, the girl's demeanor was wrong. The girls are always scared. That goes without saying. Denise had moved out of Yugoslavia when she was 9, during Tito's reign of relative peace, and she knew what a hellhole it was. To this girl, from where she had come, the United States must seem like Mars. But her fear had a different quality to it. Usually the girls stare at Denise as if she were some kind of parent or savior, looking up to her with a mix of trepidation and hope. But this girl averted her gaze. She fidgeted too much. And there was something else. Tatiana had been brought in by Pavel. He was usually good about watching them. But he hadn't been there. Denise was about to ask about that, but she decided to wait and play it out. If nothing was wrong, the girl would certainly raise Pavel's name. She hadn't. Yes, something was definitely wrong. Denise did not want to raise suspicion. She finished the exam and hurried out. Behind her sunglasses, she checked for possible surveillance vans. There were none. She looked for obvious unmarked police cars. Again, nothing. Of course, she was no expert. Though she had been working with Steve Bacard for nearly a decade, there had never been any complications. Perhaps that was why she'd let her guard down. As soon as she got back into her car, Denise reached for her cell phone. She wanted to call Bacard. But no. If they were somehow onto them, they'd be able to trace that back. Denise debated using a payphone at the nearest gas station. But they'd be expecting that, too. When she saw the sign for the rest stop, she remembered that they had a huge bank of payphones. She could call from there. If she moved fast enough, they wouldn't see her or know what phone she used. But was that safe either? She quickly sorted through the possibilities. Suppose she was indeed being followed. Driving to Bacard's office would definitely be the wrong move. She could wait and call him when she got home. But they might have a tap on her phone. This, calling from the large bank of payphones, seemed the least risky. Denise grabbed a napkin and used it to keep her fingerprints off the receiver. She was careful not to wipe it off. There were probably dozens of fingerprints already on it. Why make their job any easier? Steve Bacard picked up.
Hello.
The obvious strain in his voice made her heart sink. Where is Pavel? She asked. Denise?
Yes.
Why are you asking?
I just visited his girl. Something isn't right.
Oh, God, he moaned. What happened?
The girl called the emergency number. She said she was hemorrhaging, but I think she was lying.
There was silence.
Steve?
Go home. Don't talk to anyone.
Okay.
Denise saw the white Camaro pull up. She frowned. Hadn't she seen it before? Are there any records in your house? Bacard asked.
No, of course not.
You're sure?
Positive.
Okay, good. A woman was getting out of the Camaro. Even from this distance, Denise could see the bandage on the woman's ear. Go home, Bacard said. Before the woman could turn around, Denise hung up the phone and slipped into the bathroom. Stephen Bacard had loved the old Batman TV show as a kid. Every episode, he remembered, started out pretty much the same way. The crime would be committed. It would flash to Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara. The two law enforcement buffoons would be grim-faced. They would discuss the situation and realize that there was only one way out. Commissioner Gordon would then pick up the red bat phone. Batman would answer, promise to save the day, turn to Robin and say, to the bat poles. He stared at the phone with that creepy feeling in the pit of his stomach. This was no hero he was calling. Just the opposite, in fact. But in the end, survival was what mattered. Pretty words and justification were great during times of peace. In times of war, in times of life and death, it was simpler. Us or them. He picked up the phone and dialed the number. Lydia answered sweetly.
Hello, Stephen.
I need you again.
Bad?
Very.
We're on our way, she said.
Chapter 38.
When I got in there, Rachel said, she was in the bathroom. But I have a feeling she made a call first.
Why?
There was a line in the bathroom. She was only three people ahead of me. She should have been more.
Any way of figuring out who she called?
Not in the near future, no. Every phone in that place is taken. Even if I had full FBI access, it would take some time.
So we keep following.
Yes.
She turned behind her.
Do you have an atlas in the car?
Katerina smiled.
Many. Vern likes maps. World, country, state?
State. She dug into the pocket behind my seat and handed Rachel the atlas. Rachel uncapped a pen and started marking it up.
What are you doing? I asked. I'm not sure.
The cell phone rang. I picked it up.
You guys all right?
Yeah, Vern, we're fine.
Got my sister to watch the kids for me. I'm in the pickup, heading east. What's your 1040?
I told him we were heading to Ridgewood. He knew the town.
I'm about 20 minutes away, he said. I'll meet you at the Ridgewood Coffee Company on Willsey Square.
We may be at this midwife's house, I said.